Don Henley from 1990 gets down to the heart of the matter, which is what we're trying to do tonight, talking with Richard Dolan about his important new book, UFOs for the 21st Century Mind, covering the whole gamut of human and non-human interaction over the centuries. And when we come back, we're going to open up the phone line, see what's on your mind tonight, see if anyone has interesting tales to tell us. Stay with us. Much more to come here on Coast to Coast AM. CBS News this week ran a really interesting feature story about moose, disappearing moose in the herds disappearing from Minnesota. So the scientists trying to figure out what's going on. They hop in a helicopter, go out into the snow, run down a couple of terrified moose, tranquilize them, come down, put a hood over this terrified moose, take a couple of samples, then take the hood off and let it go. And I'm just imagining to myself, if that moose could communicate with other moose, it would be telling them about this abduction experience it just had. These people came out of the sky and grabbed it and took samples, and none of the other moose would probably believe this one. Rich, that's sort of what we're dealing with here. Some of the, right before the break, you were talking about these encounters that people have, and the tendency is you've got to be crazy. But of course, you hear them over and over again in every culture and every continent on Earth, year after year after year.
The problem, they don't stop. And you know, we have this conceit that, well, we're at the top of the food chain. What could be more advanced than us? But, you know, if there's any other life form or intelligence that is significantly more advanced than we are, they are not going to look at us as equals, and they are very likely not going to treat us with the kind of respect or implicit rights that we think that we deserve. They just, that doesn't mean that they're out to take advantage of us, but they're not necessarily going to explain everything to us the way we would want. And, you know, we have a hard time, I think, as a society, as a civilization, dealing with that idea. But I think that is what we're dealing with. I think there is an intelligence behind this phenomenon. I'm not saying there are not black budget breakaway civilization groups that have their own radical technology. I think that there are. But I do think that there is a core of this element that involves other beings who have an interest in this world. First of all, Earth is a big and fascinating place with a lot of unique forms of life. That alone would draw a lot of interest. And then there's humanity. We are quite interesting. I mean, we've got capabilities. We have a brain. We can create technology. So yes, I think that there would be others who would want to see us. And I think the key, a key moment, is our mastery of atomic technology, nuclear technology. That's what it looks like to me. Not that they weren't here before, but I think once we got nukes, really powerful weapons, my feeling is, this is only my hunch, that this is when they became very interested in us, monitoring us because of our nuclear technology.
One other question before we open up the phone lines. Where you lean these days in terms of, there are some pretty exotic possibilities considered. It used to be, okay, they're extraterrestrials from other planets coming here, and now, as you note in your book, there are a lot of other possibilities being discussed: aliens, extraterrestrials, ultra-dimensionals, time travelers, interdimensionals, whatever. Aliens, I guess non-humans is the way we should call them. They're something other than us. Maybe they live here among us. Maybe we live within them. Where are you leaning these days?
My best guess is that there's a contingent that lives here that's probably genetically modified to be the way that is optimal for them to be here on planet Earth. I certainly think an extraterrestrial hypothesis is totally valid. And, I mean, look, we are not far away in our own society from literally being able to envision going to another star system, maybe not you and me in our biological bodies, but an artificially intelligent organism, an artificially intelligent ship, which might then, upon arrival at some distant place, create its own life form with which to interact with that society or that planet, a life form that's congenial to that planet, that can handle the bacteria, that can handle the solar radiation. Similarly, I think that other beings who found Earth have been here a long, long, long time. And it's not necessarily the case that they would want to take over overtly and just dominate. They might just want to live here quietly, manage things quietly. There's all kinds of possibilities. I think that they've taken native life forms, whether insectoid life forms or reptilian life forms or humanoid life forms, and they've adapted them for their own purposes. My own feeling is that this is probably what they did, and maybe that is why we are seeing reptoids or talking about reptoids or insectoids or whatever, that they could be artificially created. I mean, we're so close to this ourselves. We're looking at 3D printing technology, being able to print biological organic material. How high is it going to be when you get that at the nanoscale and being able to do integrated circuits and super advanced genetics? Are we maybe 20, 30, 50 years away from that to be able to create, literally 3D print, a sentient being? Sounds crazy today. I don't think it's going to sound crazy in 50 years.
No, maybe less than that. I mean, the pace of technological and scientific change is now exponential. I mean, every day it accelerates even more.
So what I'm saying is these beings could literally be anything. You know, one of the things that confuses us is the plethora of types of creatures that we're encountering. But human beings a century from now might look at these stories and think, oh, that's no big deal. They're just 3D printing another variation. That's what we do all the time. So it's hard for us to put all of these pieces together with the science and the technology that we have today. But we have to remember, time is not going to stand still. This is one reason I wrote a little bit about 3D printing in the book as well. I really try to cover as many contemporary technological developments that I thought were relevant to help us make sense. But I think we're dealing with multiple beings, probably artificially created.
Let's go to the phone lines. Kevin in Warsaw, New York, on the Wild Card line. You're on with Richard Dolan. Hi, Kevin. All right, I'm not hearing Kevin.
I'm not either.
Let's try Stan in Denver. Are you there, Stan? Anybody? Okay. Somebody want to tell me what's going on with the phones? Okay. I'll tell you what, we have plenty we can talk about, Rich, as well. I didn't touch on this, but I mentioned it before in the last hour about Stan Romanek, a UFO researcher who is charged with child porn. Of course, we're not going to speculate whether he's guilty or not, but I know from reading online that he's talking about using sort of a UFO defense, that maybe he was targeted because of his interest in ufology. Your general take on that?
Well, yeah, I hadn't read that by statement by Stan, but I had read a statement by his wife, Lisa Romanek, on her Facebook wall, strongly defending him. There's no way that I would ever care to speculate on the truth or falsity of what he's being charged with. It's distressing and it is disturbing that people would be their computers would be targeted in such a way, based on what appeared to be some kind of anonymous tip from last spring, and that does seem to be the case. One wonders why it took them so long to do their investigation as well. I mean, this is like nearly a year later now. So he's had this sort of Damocles hanging over his head. But we've been in an era of dirty tricks for years and years and years. I mean, back in the 1960s, we had the FBI doing its famous, infamous COINTEL program, where they would literally plant evidence against innocent people as a way to destroy them politically and professionally. That's part of American history. It's obviously well within the capability of a sophisticated national security apparatus to plant evidence in someone's computer, too. I'm not saying they've done it. But I talked earlier about suspicious deaths, and I don't think that's beyond black ops type of thing.
I agree with you. Let's give phone lines another.
Just don't know. Just don't know.
We'll try the phones again. I don't know. Is Kevin in Warsaw, New York, still on the wild card line? Okay. How about Stan?
Well, the other thing about Stan is this is not to defend or attack the veracity of what he has been claiming as a contactee. And
right.
I've had my own reservations. I will just say this plainly about a number of the things that he has said. What I find with some of these people who've had contact experiences is that there may be a core of truth to what has happened, but I find with some of them, either they develop a need to stay in the limelight, they need to keep the whole thing going, and I feel that some of these people make things up after a while.
Yeah, they like the attention. You have to keep upping the ante a little bit.
There was a video of him that came out just a week or two ago that I looked at very carefully. A lot of people looked at, and it did look to me that he was faking some kind of event where a pencil was supposedly flying past his shoulder. And when you look at it very carefully, you see his thumb sticking up at the bottom part of the screen, where, in other words, what it looks like is that he flipped the pencil intentionally over his shoulder.
Yeah.
Didn't think that his hand would be caught in the frame, but it was,
Oh
and
boy.
then pretended like to think, what the heck was that? Like looking over his shoulder. And to me, that just looked like so transparently fake. And a lot of other, I wasn't alone in that. So that, to me, I'm a little more interested. When I look at a case like the San Romanek case, that's what I'm interested in. I want to
Right.
see, is there evidence of a fakery or not in what he has to say.
All right, I think we've got a Stan on our wild card line in Denver. Are you there, Stan?
I'm here. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Oh, okay, good. Because yeah, I was saying I'm here. I'm here.
Okay,
Sorry
we can
about
hear
that,
you.
Stan. That was all my fault.
No problem. I don't think it was you at all. And it's thank you for being on the show tonight. It's refreshing, and I'm glad there's somebody with clear heads that can explain things that people want and need to know. However, this other Stan person here. Don't you denigrate our names? I don't like that. That doesn't sound good to me.
What's on your
And
mind?
if you're being a fraud, stop. I wanted to talk about, has there been any research done in the year of 89, spring mainly, because I was having lucid dreaming and I know I was being contacted telepathically because this person showed me, this whatever it is, showed me visions of things to come, and they have all passed. And I've seen them exactly in my vision from
I want to
89 to
jump in.
89.
So first of all, 1989 in the history of this UFO phenomenon was very busy. That was the spring when George was talking to Bob Lazar, actually, right, George?
Yes.
There was a lot of other UFO activity being reported around the world. Just depends on where you were. I don't know where you were. In terms of dreams, and basically, you're talking almost like prophecy, it sounds like. This is something that I find very interesting in this phenomenon, is this, let's call it a telepathic connection, let's call it the consciousness connection. And I will just say my own journey in this field, 20 years, I've come a long way in trying to grapple with this. I started out back in the 90s very materialistic in my philosophy of this, thinking I only want to research, the nuts and bolts, what I can confirm. All of this goofy, crazy stuff, I don't want to deal with it. Well, guess what? This phenomenon doesn't allow that. If you look at it honestly, if you look at it rigorously, you find that there are cases like yours and many, many, many others where people talk about being given visions. So, having said that, I don't know about the truth of what you're saying. But I would ask you, we have a lot of time. I don't know how much we have. Could you briefly, quickly describe one or two of these visions that have come true? Are they public? Are they private? Are they what?
Are you still there? Can you still hear
Yeah.
me?
Yeah, we're listening to you. Can he's just
Okay.
asking you a question. Did you hear that?
Yes, I did. And that's exactly right, kind of why I'm calling in to share what my experience was back then. And I figured that, yes, there was a lot going on because I was also told that there's also a war in space. And I've heard that talked about by a few people. And
Stan,
I know I wasn't the
can
only
you
one
tell us
contacted with that.
what you dreamed that came true?
Yeah, well, I don't think it was a dream. I think it was a contact myself because I know dreams and I know contacts.
Okay,
This was a
what
contact.
happened? What was the contact that came true?
Oh, well, the tsunami, New York, a whole lot of other things that are going on and
Right,
that
the
are
tsunami in
right
Asia.
up now. And it's kind of like, when you tell people what you've seen and stuff, they don't believe you. And I tell them, well, you don't have to believe what I say. Just remember it. And when you do, contact me then. And when it happens, contact me then if you
So are
remember.
you talking natural disasters? That's what you've
Yes.
seen?
Well, they're not natural disasters. They're made. And you were
Okay.
talking about the nuclear reason why they're here, and that's because we are very sloppy with containing and controlling and maintaining our nuclear plants and facilities, and that's why it is really taking. I just heard that the children in California that are being born now are having thyroid problems because of the radiation from Fukushima. I'm not going to discount that. I'm going to believe it myself.
Well, this makes sense to a lot of us that they would be concerned about it. I guess I'm interested in cases where how people get that kind of communication. What's the nature of it? Does it come in the form of a dream? Does it come in form of direct contact? But yes, I find that very interesting.
Thank you, Stan, for the call. A lot of these alien editorials have been received over the years. You mentioned them in the book, Rich, about contactees who, you know, take care of your planet, be good, be careful, don't do this, don't do that. And I it's hard to tell how sincere these visitors are, these non-humans are.
Some of them come directly out of the philosophy of theosophy, that is from Helena Blavatsky, late 19th century. And that's something that I do a little bit of kind of a history of. In other words, seeing the flowing in of New Age thinking into UFO thinking, really, UFO culture. I mean, it's always kind of been there. It was always there back in the 1950s with some of the contactees back then, who were really, many of them were kind of giving new what would become known as New Age philosophy. It really became intense after the 1970s, going into the 80s and beyond, especially when you start getting people channeling or claiming to channel entities from elsewhere, often extraterrestrials, sometimes from the future, you know. And that's become like a really kind of confusing but integral part of some of this, like what we call UFO culture. Some of it I feel is an unfortunate influence, because the problem with channeling, obviously, is how does one confirm the veracity of most of these statements? Most of them are literally not falsifiable. They're not confirmable. If one of the channeled entities would give the answer to a difficult mathematical equation, or would be able to give tangible information about the inner workings of the Federal Reserve, or something that we could work with, I'd be very happy with that. Typically, what they give us is philosophy.
Platitudes and funny name like Ashtar or something, and then platitudes about take care of yourselves and your planet. And it seemed like these aliens or non-humans wanted to help us, they surely could.
One would think so.
Yeah.
One would think so.
We'll go back to the phones in a couple of minutes. I think we've got our technical problems worked out. We're going to take a short break and come back and get to as many of your questions as we can with my guest, Rich Dolan, author of the new book, UFOs for the 21st Century Mind, Cheap Tricks. Cheap Trick takes us into the break. Figured a lot of you have had quite enough of winter. Maybe you need a Jimmy Buffett to take you along, maybe take you to a mental beach at least so you could thaw out a little bit. We're talking with Richard Dolan, author of UFOs for the 21st Century Mind, an excellent new book. You got to check it out. Get to as many of your calls as we can when we come back concerning the interaction of humans and non-humans through the centuries. Much more to come here on Coast to Coast AM. Our final segment with Richard Dolan. We're going to the phones. John in Jessup, Maryland. Good morning, John.
Good morning. And I just want to say, I'm one of that small minority who usually groans when they talk about the UFOs. But this has been a really good and engaging program, and I'm thankful for everyone being on here. I have a question for Richard.
Okay.
And the question is, and I've seen this as a theme in some of the science fiction books and in the comics as well. But do you believe that the government has a live extraterrestrial being held hostage somewhere where they're trying to extract information from them?
Oh, golly. Well, it's certainly one of the things that has come out in the land of leaks a number of times over the years. There's obviously never been anything remotely like a confirmation of that. But it would seem to me that it wouldn't be impossible if you have crash retrievals, you have claims of interaction by various people with extraterrestrial beings. The gentleman that I interviewed about a year ago that's on YouTube, the anonymous gentleman, he made such a claim himself that he saw a live being behind a glass. Such claims have been made elsewhere. That's really all that I could tell you at this point. I mean, I would leave it open as a real possibility, but I have no confirmation. I don't know if any other researcher can say that either.
Thank you, John. Appreciate it. We're going to go east of the Rockies. Timmy in Jacksonville, Florida. Good morning.
Hey, George. Hey, Richard. Great show. I was trying to get to bed. crazy
good
weekend.
Luck.
All kinds of rain, but hey. So here's my question. And, you know, I have a reason for this. You know, I've probably had ADD my whole life. I'm probably bipolar. So I had a question about meds, you know. The actual physical technology that we've learned with our aircraft, our you know, the things we don't even know about. You know, that's more the physical realm. But, you know, I'm kind of an ETer. I'm more of an end-timer kind of guy. So whether aliens are, you know, are good or bad, angelic or you know, not angelic, negative, it's kind of interesting, the pharmaceutical side, you know, as far as controlling the masses. I mean, you know, I read in a big book where it talks about there's going to be a world leader and blah, blah, blah. You know, some people believe in mass exodus of certain people who wear crowns. I'm not so sure about that one. But, you know, it would be an interesting perspective. You know, I always try to think in threes, you know. Mass people are vanished. You got to have a reason, UFOs. Or kind of like on the men are from Mars, the little three, the little bubble-headed guys where the hippies. And I'm a hippie myself. I got a lot going on at home and work, but, you know, we're still cranking. Where they're out there waving, waiting for the aliens, and they zap them.
Well, I'm not really sure what you're
may not be.
Am I missing it?
It may not be a good thing pharmaceutically. You know, if the masses move for a certain feeling, you know, the same thing with spiritually. If the masses move towards aliens or angels or demons, whatever it is, it's just a great show, man. Thank you so much, you guys.
Oh,
well,
oh,
thanks. I wasn't okay, really Timmy, sure what the caller meant by pharmaceutically, but certainly, look, if this ever comes out in an open way, which I think it's going to come out in an open way, we're going to certainly have to keep our heads, and whether we will keep our heads or not is another issue. I think there will be an end to this secrecy one day. I do feel that it will happen, and we probably won't be ready for it when it happens. This thing is going to be a big mess.
I think it's going to be a big mess as well. Depends on what it is, I guess. West of the Rockies, Errol in Paradise, California. Hello.
Hello. So it's quite appropriate that your guest is using the word mine in his documentation because when being introduced to a phase of reality that is more akin to mine than matter, we shouldn't be surprised that it has no less agility and is no less inscrutable than is the mind itself. And we might also realize that, you know, centuries ago, it was known that humankind would eventually be brought in touch with their antecedents. And so it was foretold that knowledge would increase and books would be opened, all things that are happening in this generation where there's such a wealth of information that's being made available to us as a result of our having been brought in touch with the sources of mind, with those that are volitional participants in our experience of thinking, our experience of thought. Mm-hmm. So I was just wondering, in what sense is your guest using the word mind in his in the title of his book?
Yeah. Very elegant formulation, sir. Thank you for that.
Yeah.
And when I conceived of the title for the UFOs for the 21st century mind, I had a couple of things in my mind. Certainly one is that this was a subject that was in desperate need of a fresh reformulation for contemporary thinking individuals. Every UFO book that had was on my shelf was either, I mean, there's a lot of good books on my shelf, but some of them were very, very specific to one aspect of the phenomenon, and a lot of them just seemed very kind of old and obsolete, and I wanted a fresh approach that dealt with the entire subject as freshly as I could. But mind also is a kind of touching upon the fact that the mind has become a much more prominent aspect of UFO research than ever before. You look at UFO research of the 1970s, and there was really no emphasis whatsoever on mental connections, on consciousness between us and them, if we can say whoever them happened to be. Whereas today, that's a much, much more important aspect of the phenomenon. And so, yes, I wanted to kind of make a reference to that. And it has to do a connection with the physics of things like non-locality and entanglement, all of which I think moving forward into the 21st century are going to be important aspects of ufology and of science in general.
Spooky action at a distance. That's right. Appreciate that call. That was pretty interesting. First time caller, Cindy in Chino Hills, California. Hi, Cindy.
Hi. Hi. I grew up in Pasadena. And when I was about 6 years old, out in the backyard, I was playing with some friends of mine, little girls. And this is about 1968, I would guesstimate. And I looked up in the sky, and this was in the afternoon, saw a object that was not completely physical, by the way, but it was saucer-shaped. And my question is, you know, as time has gone by, you know, in retrospect, I remember that, you know, that this is very close to JPL.
Yeah.
And I was wondering if you have any stories about sightings in that area. For those of you who are not familiar with this part of Southern California, if you've seen the Rose Parade every year, the helicopter will zoom out and you'll see that we're in the foothills there, you know, of very large mountains. And, you know, I saw this object flying in front of the mountains.
So it was partly physical, but partly not physical?
Yeah, exactly. You know, if you are, you know, much later, I, you know, got to see Vandenberg, you know, missile launches and, you know, how when something gets up to a certain elevation, it'll catch the light, you know, even though maybe the sun is setting in, you know, where you are. You know, you can see the light for, it seems like, an hour, you know, when it gets up to a certain height. It was almost like it was cloaking or something, or, you know, not completely all there.
A couple of things come to my mind. Of course, how can I know? This is 40 years after the fact. But either JPL was creating something really funky in 1968 that is would be wild today. I suspect that's not the answer. Or there might have been an agency that was very interested in what was going on at JPL.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a very interesting place. You know, that's if it is what you saw. I mean, you know, it is always possible. I'm not saying this happened with you, but people sometimes can misinterpret ordinary phenomena for things that they think are much more unusual. But if what you saw was a truly unusual object, if what you saw was a truly something beyond our ordinary reality, then I would guess, I'd take a wild guess, that they were interested in checking out JPL.
And we're both jealous that you saw it.
I think so.
Yeah. Thank you. Thanks for the call and welcome to the program, your first time call. Wildcard line, Jesse in Kentucky. Good morning, Jesse. What's on your mind for Rich Dolan?
And good morning, George. Good morning, Rich. I live in a very central portion of Kentucky. There is a Bluegrass Army Depot probably 20, 25 miles from where I live. Very recently, I don't know if you guys are aware, I know it made local news, I don't know how national it went. There have been loud, almost like supersonic booms that we've had. They've been heard for miles and miles. We also have had reports and photographs. Actually, a lady about 2 hours from where I live videotaped a fireball in the sky, which, of course, they dismissed as an asteroid or whatever. But these things are happening more and more often. My best friend, Nikki, and I, we live together, and we watch the sky quite often. And there are a number of things up there that I know are not stars. And I don't know how many of them are our government or our other entities.
Yeah. And let me jump in on this. I'm fascinated by
about this area, or, you know, is there more than what we're being told, or?
Right. I would like to address that, and because it's a fascinating topic to me. A couple of years ago, I haven't done too many night vision glass observations of the sky, but I did a long one a couple of years ago, and this is in a part of Illinois. I looked up, and with the night vision glasses, I saw the entire sky look like a big freeway with all of this activity, all of these objects. I was astonished at how much, and without those, without the night vision, I couldn't see anything. And you know, and now the booms that are not just being heard in Kentucky where you are, but everywhere, they're being reported everywhere. The fireballs. I have believed for some time that there is a tremendous amount of activity going on, not being reported. I don't know if it's a war. I don't know what it is, but I think that there is a tremendous amount of activity that is being shielded from the general population. At various times, I've given my opinion on what I believe is a secret space program. I do believe there is such a program. And these explosions could be anything. They could certainly be the sign of some kind of clandestine operation. The problem that we have in this society, once again, I want to come back to this, is the loss of our fundamental freedom of being able to get this information out of our government. I do believe that people have a right to know this, and I think it's criminal that we are not getting honest answers from our political officials on the matter.
Jesse, thank you for that call, and I agree with you, Richard. I think there's a lot of stuff going on up there, including these gigantic surveillance platforms that are just sucking up emails and cell phone calls and filing them away.
On our tax dollars.
Yep. We got a former Air Force guy in Denver, Len, on the wildcard line. Hi, Len. How you doing?
Hi. I'd like to ask Richard if he's familiar with the ANFPS-85 radar site down in Eglin Air Force Base.
No, I mean, not any of that. I know Eglin Air Force Base, at least read about it, but that particular radar, no, I am not.
I used to work there in the 1970s, and we tracked satellites, missiles, space objects. Matter of fact, our radar was mentioned, I believe it was a book, Operation Blue Book, back in in the 70s, and the author mentioned that this was the only radar that he thought was in existence that could actually track UFOs. And so we would, everything we tracked, we would give it a five-digit number, and you know, the satellites that would come around, we would recognize them just based on their size and shape and speed.
So you guys did track UFOs back there?
We would assign a 90,000 number to objects that weren't man-made, and we were only allowed to make, I think it was 22 hits on them, and then we were supposed to stop sending the radar to those objects. But I actually would have a program that would report to the base commander or the radar commander every day on how many UFOs we were tracking.
Is that right?
How many? I mean, how many did you see?
Well, back then, we probably hit two or three a day. I was always anxious to find out if there was some way we could, you know, keep tracking them and see how big they were exactly, how fast they were going. But we were just told that if you hit something 22 times and it's not something that we can make, stop tracking it. And then another interesting thing is Bendix was a vendor that helped build this huge system. The radar is like 7 or 8 stories high. It's like the whole side of a building. But when they were testing for the missiles, they had a missile. They were going to do a missile launch down in the Caribbean, and we were going to track it. So they did a countdown. And as soon as it was time to lift off, we started getting hits on the missile. And when we radioed back down there and said everything's going great, they said we had a failure on launch. And everybody at the radar site swears it was UFO playing games with us.
Fascinating.
Lynn, I'm sorry.
I'm sorry, what now?
I was going to say Len might want to leave his contact information with our gal Gina there, and we might want to talk further. I had a feeling that Richard might want to communicate further with him.
I find it fascinating what he has to say, and just I wanted to add that there are a couple of other accounts of UFOs being tracked from other facilities. Of course, NORAD has a number of these accounts that have come out, but there's one that is from a friend and colleague of mine. I think you know him, George, Ron Regier.
Sure.
Who worked at a company called Aerojet for many years and had access legally, but accidentally got access to a database that they called it, I think, the Itty Bitty Database, and it had a list of all of the fast walkers, that is space-based UFOs, that were tracked by this one particular type of satellite system, the DSP, Defense Support Program Satellite, a series of geosynchronous satellites in Earth orbit that were designed supposedly to track missile launches, but they, according to Ron, they were ideal for monitoring UFOs, and they tracked something like almost 300 of them in a 20-year span from the 1970s and 80s.
Be nice to be able to figure out where that file is stashed, huh, Rich?
Well, he had a copy of the printout, and he gave a copy to me. I have it. So it's got a list of space-based UFOs from like 1973 to around, 1990, 91 or so.
We are pretty much out of time. I want to wish you the best of luck with the book. I encourage people to check it out, UFOs for the 21st Century Mind. Thanks, Richard Dolan, for hanging in there with us for 4 hours.
It was my pleasure, George. Absolutely.
And good luck on the Canadian tour. You'll have to let me know how that goes. Thank you to all our callers as well, and to my folks there, my colleagues at Coast to Coast, Gina Salvati, David Baginski, Dan Galati, webmaster Tim Vidal, and producer Chris Boros, and all the crew. And I'll be back next month. Good night, everyone.